wonder how them rats feel about that. Oh, well, these are the Ventures, and the song is called Soul Breeze. Monitor host, how about that? Your regular man, Brad Crandall, returns next week. But meanwhile, I'm back with my favorite medium, radio. Well, not quite my favorite medium. I mean, my favorite medium is a short, fat lady from Portland, Maine, who has phenomenal powers involving ESP. She predicts the future by reading cards, tea leaves, and the hard way, beer foam. And she never misses. True. Last week, she said I'd be back in radio. But she didn't say radio repair. So while I get back to the workbench and my little crystal set, you enjoy Monitor Music by Mason Williams Orchestra. Thank you. Just a few days ago, a major crackdown on organized crime in New York State netted police 10 men described as key racket figures. The sudden rackets raid was a result of an 8-month investigation in wealthy Westchester County, which zeroed in on a reported $1 million a year gambling operation in the city of New Rochelle alone. That investigation is partly traceable to a crusading 43-year-old Presbyterian minister, Reverend Albert Fay Hill. It was he who organized the North Avenue Irregulars, a group of New Rochelle women determined to wipe out mafia and Cosa Nostra operations in their hometown. Reverend Hill tells how the Irregulars were recruited as he talks with Monitor reporter Dean Mell of NBC News.
Reverend Hill, why did you rally together the North Avenue Irregulars? Was there any one incident responsible for the inspiration?
Well, it really went back to the time when the State Investigation Commission held a series of open hearings in which they revealed that southern Westchester cities, five particularly, with New Rochelle one of them, had failed to suppress various outcroppings of organized crime, particularly gambling, which provides the biggest source of revenue for the hoods. Of course, they reinvest it in such things as narcotics, but they start there. And the city wasn't doing anything about this, and so I began to demand over a radio program that I had that they try to clean up the situation and provide us with the kind of law enforcement that we felt we deserved. And then we had some considerable success, but we decided we'd go for something bigger because we were still not getting the kind of cooperation from local and county authorities that we thought we should get, and we decided to go for a policy bank. And that's when I organized these women to shadow the hoodlums as they went about their business, and eventually they did lead us to the headquarters.
I suppose you encountered the familiar don't get involved reaction from some of the people who might be most affected by your activities. How did you deal with such reaction?
Yeah, that's really one of the things that we had that was the most difficult. We had so many people who said, particularly public officials who said, this is not work for amateurs, leave it to us, which was another way of saying leave it to us to do nothing, because that's exactly what they were doing, or virtually nothing. And I just felt that this was something that had to be done and nobody else was doing it, but that if we could demonstrate that a Presbyterian minister and 12 housewives with babies in the back seat could do this, maybe the police would be goaded into action. So we just didn't pay any attention to their ideas.
Can you give us some specific incidents where you or your family or members of your North Avenue Irregulars were threatened?
Shortly after I began, and after the first series of arrests, the federal agents came to me and said that they had received word from some of their informants that there was a plot to have me murdered, and that a man who was an expert on a bomb was supposed to be in town. And so they put certain pressure on the hoodlums to let them know that if anything happened to me, they would be, they would concentrate agents from around the country to make life unbearable for them. And so that was dropped, and there were... Another time they sent a woman to see me to try to lure me to her apartment, but poor dear, she was so homely that she would offend my taste, if not my morals. And then there was one other time when a couple of fantastic informants we had who did undercover work for us brought back word that they were plotting to have me killed. They even identified a couple of torpedoes or hitmen in town. And this time a police guard was put in our house for literally months on end.
Reverend Hill, then, you did seriously have the impression that the mafia took you seriously.
There's no doubt about what they did, because we had informants who actually brought back to us and who reported also to the federal agents that business was down to only 25% of what it had been, which meant...
This gambling business, you mean?
Yes, almost entirely. This meant a tremendous reduction in their revenue, and it was due to a very simple reason. Before this, they knew they had only to watch out for cops and then maybe once a year federal agents, because they were spread so thin that they couldn't operate very often. But this time, they had to watch out for everybody who came in. They knew that I had some of their old customers working for me, and that every little woman in tennis shoes might be working for me with a tape recorder in her purse. And so they got very nervous and were unable to accept new customers. They were hurting.
Reverend Albert Fay Hill, a crusading minister who faced up to the mafia and made them back down. A bit later, he tells Monitor how to organize similar groups like his in other big cities. And he sounds a warning about the national conspiracy of organized crime. So stick around and meanwhile enjoy Monitor Music by Jean C. Riley. This is one of her latest.
There was a time we'd sit in the backyard, 'cause the house would get so hot. From the summer sun, there was no way of sleeping. And you'd play your old guitar, we'd fight mosquitoes and enjoy your backyard concerts, for we had no television. We'd just begun our life as man and wife, and hardships then could scarcely scare us into quitting. Things were far from being fine. We often dined upon a dime, but there never was a time we didn't love. And that Christmas brought our saddest day, when your pride gave way as you told the kids there'd be no gifts 'cause we were broke. And though their little tears of grief was so hard to see, it didn't hurt me like the lump I knew was in your throat. It was then with arms entwined we both broke down and cried, for it seemed like nothing good would ever come. The doctor bills we couldn't pay, they came and took our car away, but there never was a time we didn't love. Now there's an easy chair for my back, a satin pillow for my head, and the kids are wild about their brand new cars. Dad and I can order steak with all the trimmings and not worry if we spend a dollar more than we can spare. No wonder in our prayers we thank the man upstairs who led us through the years of rearing kids and paying bills. And I think he guided us not because we were smart, but just because there never was a time we didn't love. Oh, there never was a time, never was a time, there never was a time we didn't love.
By the way, there never was a time when a courageous churchman named Reverend Hill ever doubted the outcome of his anti-crime crusade in New Rochelle, New York. He'll continue his dramatic story of the North Avenue Irregulars next on the Monitor Beacon.
New York City area volunteers of the Leukemia Society of America are ringing doorbells and visiting friends and neighbors to aid in a medical crusade against leukemia. Leukemia kills approximately 30,000 Americans, adults and children, annually. The Leukemia Society of America concentrates all of its human and financial resources in the fight against leukemia. Funds raised during the New York City appeal will be used to support the Society's nationwide medical research program, to provide leukemia education here in the New York City area, and to aid leukemia patients and families in need of assistance. Your dollars are urgently needed to help continue and expand the fight against leukemia. Please give generously when your neighbor volunteer calls on you, or send your contribution to Leukemia Society of America, 211 East 43rd Street, New York, New York, 10017. That's Leukemia Society of America, 211 East 43rd Street, New York, 10017.
WNBC, Radio 660, New York.
Monitor once more, and me, Gary Moore, at exactly 20 minutes after the hour. Now let's hear part two of a story you might easily subtitle, A Suburb Battles the Mafia. Reverend Albert Fayhill continues his fascinating account of how he marshaled the housewives of New Rochelle, New York, to help bust organized crime in that city. Our reporter, Dean Mell of NBC News.
Reverend Hill, do you think your kind of crusade could work in any city having similar crime and corruption?
Well, I think so, and I think it's about the only way, really, that you can goad public officials into action, because they will just inevitably say, no, there really isn't anything going here, and you have to prove that there is, and you don't have ordinarily the kind of facilities at your disposal that they do. But we were able to prove beyond any question of a doubt that they were there, and that, and this did force them to take some action. I think it can be done in any city, and there are groups that are forming throughout the country as a result of our action. Because organized crime deals in services, and they virtually have to advertise them. It's really quite easy to identify these and to know when loan sharks are on, and people should get the data, know exactly where they are, and then actually have some people go in and place bets or get loans from the loan shark, and if necessary, gather data on narcotics agents and so forth, and then forward it to the responsible authorities. I always reiterate that we did not play vigilantes. We were not interested in this. We never made any arrests or any attempt at punishing people. We systematically gathered data and gave it to responsible people, in this case, federal agents in most cases.
because you felt you couldn't deal through local law enforcement agents?
Well, we did deal through them on some occasions. At first, we felt very definitely that way. Later, there was some improvement. I tried in the beginning to work with the city manager, the city attorney, the police, the district attorney. I went every place, got no action, and finally ended up with the federal authorities. Most of my informants refused to have anything to do with local police because they distrusted them.
Do you feel then that organized crime is real and is an everyday actual threat in our communities? It's not just a local autonomy, that it is organized?
But there's no doubt about this. We had one very good informant who was able to bring back information to us that when they were thinking about killing me, they actually asked the advice of a big mafia thug in Chicago. We were able to trace lines without any shadow of a doubt all the way from Philadelphia and New York City through Westchester County. We identified notorious hoodlums from the Yonkers area who were in New Rochelle exerting authority. There's no doubt at all, really. There is no longer any doubt that we are dealing with a nationwide, even an international conspiracy of highly efficient and violent criminals who are enormously wealthy and able to exert tremendous power in our communities.
Thank you very much, Reverend Hill. We've been talking with the Reverend Albert Fay Hill, organizer of a housewives group which battled a mafia in the suburbs. It's all in his book, The North Avenue Irregulars. This is Dean Mell for Monitor.
And by the way, a few things have happened since the Reverend Hill wrote his book. He's been awarded both local and national awards for brotherhood and for anti-crime and delinquency work. His book becomes a motion picture this year, and he's presently living and working in Colorado, where his ministry has taken him. Earlier, we mentioned one other significant development. Just a few days ago, police moved in on Mafia and Cosa Nostra operations in New Rochelle, New York, in what officials termed the finest undercover work in Westchester County in 21 years. So, maybe this is a dramatic answer to those people who witness the existence of crime flourishing in their community, and yet they still repeat the old cop-out, "We'd better not get involved." Kind of makes you think, doesn't it?
Bodkins, that was King Richard's Flugel Nights.
Here's a reminder from your FTD florist. Easter Sunday's just around the corner, and now is the time to call or visit your nearby FTD florist. When you order early, he'll assure on-time delivery, even save you money on out-of-town orders. And this year, there's more. Many FTD florists can send a combination of flowers and candy, but flowers plus or flowers alone, the time to order for Easter is now. The one who can make it all happen is your FTD florist.
At the Capitol Rotunda, the body of former President Dwight D. Eisenhower lies in state. For a report, we go now to Carl Stern, NBC News, Washington.
Both victor and the vanquished are joining tonight in a tribute of friendship to former president and war hero Dwight David Eisenhower. President de Gaulle of France appeared an hour ago, saluted, stood silently for a minute, then saluted again and departed. He said nothing but left a wreath at the foot of the closed casket. He wore his military uniform. Premier Mariano Rumor of Italy, a nation defeated by the Allies in World War II, is to be here shortly leading a delegation of Italian representatives. On each side of the casket, a wreath has been placed, one by the Senate and one by the House. A passerby left a sprig of flowers along the velvet cordon. It was removed and put into a nearby hall lined with flowers. Outside, it is cold and clear. The moon is bright. The few lights cast an eerie half-glow on the crowd now stretched three blocks distant. It's a line which has not shortened. The rotunda will remain open through the night. It may be without purpose, but reporters tend to look at these affairs in the comparative. It's inevitable to compare the people filing past tonight with those who came in 1963 when President Kennedy was killed. The crowd then felt a sense of tragedy and horror, an almost visceral unwillingness to believe a leader could be taken so easily. In contrast, those who are waiting tonight here in Washington and who have come to pay homage to the president have come in affection and gratitude. And that is true also of Charles de Gaulle. Carl Stern, NBC News at the Capitol Rotunda.
NBC News will continue to present comprehensive coverage throughout the period of mourning for former President Dwight D. Eisenhower. This is Gary Moore.
When a young man's fancy turns, it's for love his poor heart yearns. 'Cause it's spring and girls all sing.
That's a new version of the song that's already had a very wonderful year, Gentle on My Mind, and it was Lawrence Welk's orchestra. And by the way, I'm a new version of a monitor host, Gary Moore. Happy to be minding the beeper, because it's always nice to be with friends. And I mean monitor, you, and Henry Morgan, another healthy host. Healthy? Well, let Henry tell us.
I hope you're in good health. I really do. I hope you've always been in good health so that you don't even understand what I'm about to discuss, which is doctors. I hope you never need a doctor. And I think most doctors will agree with me. They have enough to do. The trouble these days is that most doctors do only one thing. It's not that the human body's become more difficult. It's just that a little more is known about each part than before, and doctors tend to specialize in certain areas. A kid will be in, say, the third year of medical school and suddenly find he's got a thing for ears. He doesn't know why. He just digs ears. In time, he starts bringing ears home with him. He falls in love with the curves, or he likes the way they wiggle. Or perhaps he's a high-five nut. Next thing you know, he's got a life's work ahead of him. Ears. He's a doctor, all right, but he can't bandage a finger. You stick out your tongue for him, he's forgotten what it is. Now, another boy in that same class will get it in a different way. He's going along, minding his own business, and one day he finds that he's fascinated by skin. He digs derm. He knows that skin is waterproof, that it doesn't leak in or out, that it can tell heat from cold, and that it gets goose flesh. This intrigues him to the point that he doesn't care anymore about what's under it. He's ready to spend his time prodding it, pinching it, rubbing salve on it, and being known as a dermatologist. Now, what this leads to is that very few doctors are general practitioners anymore. The general practitioner, or GP, is what used to be known as a family doctor. He knew about cut fingers and skin and ears and throats and broken legs and just about everything. He didn't specialize in just the big toe. Well, since the old-fashioned GP is dying out, the other day the governor of New York State signed a bill that establishes a whole new thing in medicine. The state universities in New York State will now have a course for the general practitioner which makes him a specialist. You heard me. It is now official that a GP in New York can become a specialist. A specialist of what? Why, a specialist in general practice. That is, a specialist in not specializing. This is Henry Morgan. You may say I don't know what I'm talking about. No, I know what I'm talking about. I don't know what the governor's talking about.
I really don't understand Henry's fit of pique. He's always such a quiet, shy, soft-spoken young man. Well, anyway, Hankler, old buddy, may you never change. We need your kind of salty, no-nonsense talk. If you'll pardon a personal opinion, I kind of rank Henry alongside people like Mark Twain, Groucho Marx, Fred Allen, and Mary Margaret McBride. Long may he wave. This is part of the Noble Callahan family, Mike and Judy, to be specific.
No one will be drinking any more wine. I'll wake the sun up by giving him a fresh air full of the wind cup, and I won't be found in shadows hiding sorrow. I can wait for fate to bring around to me any part of my tomorrow.
Carefully. On the water, then boat, water ski, and swim carefully. At home? Wonderful. Just relax. You're on the monitor beacon.
Well, when I'm driving, I'm behind the wheel, so I don't think I need them.
I figure that when your number's up, it's up, and they aren't going to save you.
I don't like the way they feel around, you know, the waist.
Oh, no. That's too much like work to put them on.
Dick Flynn will never work again. Like too many drivers, he found an excuse for not wearing safety belts. What's your excuse?
Hi, this is Ruth Buzzy. All I said was, The best thing about New York is Joe O'Brien. Oh, and boy, did I get told where to go. Woo-hoo!
This is the place, WNBC Radio 660, where you can hear me, Joe O'Brien, weekdays 5 to 9 a.m. WNBC Radio 660, New York.
Gary Moore back with you, bringing more of Monitor at approximately 16 minutes before the hour. Anybody here seen Engelbert Humperdinck?
Lonely table, just for one. In a bright and crowded room. While the music has begun. I drink to memories in the gloom. Though the music's still the same, it has a bitter sweet refrain. So play the song the way it used to be. Hello. And I laugh and hide the pain. It's quite easy to let go. Then the song begins again. So play the song.
Sports with a look at the week ahead. You ready? Okay, tomorrow, National Basketball Association playoffs continue. Tuesday, the Professional Bowlers Association $100,000 Firestone Tournament of Champions in Akron. Wednesday, the National Hockey League Stanley Cup playoffs begin. Thursday, the $160,000 Greater Greensboro, North Carolina Open Golf Tournament. The NCAA Gymnastic Championships in Seattle. The East-West College All-Star Basketball Game in Memphis, and the Women's International Bowling Congress Tournament in San Diego. All of that on Thursday. On Friday, the National AAU Indoor Diving Championships in Long Beach, California, and the International Automobile Show in New York's Coliseum. Saturday, the $125,000 added San Juan Capistrano Handicap at Santa Anita, the $50,000 added Gotham Handicap at Aqueduct, and the Chicago International Dog Show. And Sunday, Japan's Hiroshi Kobayashi defends his Junior World Lightweight Boxing Championship against Panama's Antonio Amaya in Tokyo. And that's a look at the week ahead in sports. And here comes Vicki Carr with her sequel to I'm Gonna Sit Right Down and Write Myself a Letter.
With pen in hand, you sign your name. Today at 5, I'll be on that train. you think we can't find the love we once knew. If you think I can't make everything up to you, then I'll be gone, and you'll be on your own. You'll be on your own. Can you take good care of Jenny? Can you take her to school every day? Can you teach her how to play all the games that little girls play? Hear what I say. Can you teach her how to roll up her hair? Can you make sure each night that she says her prayers? Well, if you can do these things, then maybe she won't miss me. Maybe she won't miss me. And tonight, as you lay in that big lonely bed, and you look at that pillow where I laid my head, with your heart on fire, will you have no desire to kiss me or to hold me? And if you can forget the good times we had, if you don't think the good times, they outweigh the bad, well then go ahead, sign your name, and I'll be on my way. I'll be on my way.
A monitor quickie quiz. Are you ready? What is America's national pastime? Did you say baseball? Wrong, but very close. America's national pastime really is tossing down hot dogs, peanuts, and soda pop while watching baseball. For the whole story, here's Monitor Sports and Jolly Joe Garagiola.
While some young men are getting ready for the upcoming baseball season by exercising their arms and legs under a hot sun, there's another group that's getting ready by loosening up their tonsils. When the season opens in about 10 days, they'll have to be ready to walk through the grandstands of America, letting John Q. Fan know that they're carrying his hot dogs, peanuts, and soda pop. If Babe Ruth is the model for all baseball players, then the patron saint of these kids just might be a man named Harry M. Stevens. It was in the late 1880s that Mr. Stevens, then a book salesman, went to a ball game in Columbus, Ohio. He knew nothing about baseball, so he bought a program hoping that it would identify the players for him and also explain the game. It did neither. So Mr. Stevens made an appointment with the owner of the Columbus team. He bought the program rights at the ballpark for $500, and by the next afternoon had sold $700 worth of advertising space. His career had started. And the next day he personally walked through the Columbus ballpark carrying his programs and giving birth to an immortal phrase as he yelled, "Here you are, get your scorecard. You can't tell the players without a scorecard." By the time the 1900s rolled around, he was in business in Toledo and Milwaukee, Pittsburgh, Boston, and Washington. Even in New York's famous polo grounds. And it was there, one early spring day, that another phrase was born. Noticing that the fans weren't buying ice cream or soda because of the cold weather, he gathered his vendors around him and told them to go to the neighborhood markets and buy all the German Dachshund sausages they could get and an equal number of rolls. When they returned, he told them to walk through the crowd hollering, "They're red hot. get your dachshund sausages while they're red hot. Well, one of his customers was the famous cartoonist Tad Dorgan. Next day, Dorgan described the event, but having trouble spelling dachshund, he just changed it to hot dog. Today, the fourth generation of the Stevens family operates a business that has been known to feed more than 500,000 sports fans across the country in a single day. And that can add up to a lot of red-hot dachshund sandwiches. This is Joe Garagiola for Monitor Sports.
Now a Monitor News feature. Controversy in Britain over the selection of its delegation to the Eisenhower funeral. Here with the story, David Weber, NBC News, London.
If General Eisenhower meant so much to Great Britain, as every newspaper and statesman here has been saying so eloquently, how come the country isn't sending more important people to his funeral? It's an awkward question, but more and more it's being asked. The government representative, since Prime Minister Harold Wilson is away on an official visit to Africa, is the Defense Minister, Dennis Healy. The Queen's representative is her uncle, Lord Mountbatten. She's being criticized for not sending someone higher up in the royal household. For the Kennedy funeral, she sent her husband, Prince Philip, and it's been pointed out more than once today, President Kennedy might have been popular, but he was nowhere near the heroic figure that General Eisenhower was to Great Britain. Those who are criticizing the choice of British envoys to the funeral are pointing out that other nations are sending kings and presidents, and even the general's old enemy of Germany is sending its chancellor to Washington. They're also recalling the furor that was raised in the United States when our representative to the Churchill funeral was the vice president, a post that's infinitely higher than defense secretary. The editor of the Sunday Telegraph, Peregrine Westthorne, says flatly that Britain's funeral delegation is absolutely disgraceful. And John Grigg of The Guardian is even blunter. He says the choice reflects a most incredible, staggering insensitivity. David Weber, NBC News, London.
Monitor Music, give the credit to Larry Page's orchestra. For the latest status symbol among boat owners, you can give the credit or the blame to the interior decorator. Houseboats are showing the way with traditional dark bulkhead paneling giving way to pickled, whitish-type walls, sliding glass windows and doors, or hatches, colorful fabrics, and the skipper's mate no longer has to feel like a galley slave, not with an oven rotisserie, see-through cupboards, paisley couch covers, and, an inflatable plastic chair. You know something, if this trend continues, I may have a problem with my own sailboat. I just ain't gonna put up no brocade sails. This is Gary Moore. NBC Monitor News on the Hour is next.
Hello, this is Big Wilson. The Chamber Music Workshop of the 3rd Street Music School Settlement will present a concert on Monday, March 31st at 8:15 p.m. The program will be performed by a group of amateur musicians. The concert, which is open to the public and free of charge, will be presented in the Emil Wagner Auditorium at 55 East 3rd Street here in New York City. Then Tuesday evening, April 1st at 8:30 p.m., the Department of Fine Arts of Fordham University will present an Easter week concert of choral music in Collins Auditorium on the Rose Hill campus. The featured work on the program will be Mozart's Mass No. 14 in C major, the Coronation Mass. Tickets for the concert will be available at Collins Auditorium, Fordham Road and Webster Avenue in the Bronx, on the evening of the performance. On Saturday, April 5th, the Queen's Historical Society is touring JFK Airport beginning at 12:30 p.m. For a complete walking tour schedule, please write Queen's Historical Society, Box 455, Flushing, New York, 11352. Queen's Historical Society, Box 455, Flushing.
You are listening to WNBC Radio in New York.